On the record. On News Talk.
With Pinergy. Supplying energy with insight to forward-thinking Irish businesses.
Here's something you might not have realised. The Irish border is going to be 100 years old in a couple of weeks' time because it was created by the Government of Ireland Act 1920, which split the country into two different jurisdictions. Also celebrating its birthday today, 99 years ago, the Anglo-Irish Treaty, which also did its own bit to try and create two different jurisdictions on this island. All of which, of course, is topical because of what's been going on in Brussels and in London for the last couple of days. Brexit talks, which are very much going down to the wire, but with still no agreement about several issues. Negotiators getting back today to try and have one final roll of the dice, but this after an hour-long phone call between Boris Johnson, the UK Prime Minister, and Ursula von der Leyen, the President of the European Commission yesterday, which wasn't able to break any new ground on some of the final sticking points. To discuss those sticking points and to see exactly where things might go next, delighted to say we're joined on the line by Ireland's European Commissioner for Financial Stability, Financial Services and the Capital Markets Union, Mairead McGuinness. Commissioner McGuinness, thank you very much for joining us this lunchtime on the record. Very much appreciate your time. What is your assessment of where things stand this afternoon after there was clearly no ground broken between von der Leyen and Johnson yesterday?
Well, thank you very much and good afternoon to you and your listeners. I think we're well rehearsed on this. The issues that were discussed over the weekend are the three issues that have been a problem, really not just last week, but in the last few weeks. I mean, it's fair to say that what is positive is that the talks continue. And until they end abruptly, I'm going to remain hopeful that there can be an agreement reached, notwithstanding the short and somber statement of the President Ursula von der Leyen last night when she had the conversation with the British Prime Minister. So I think that a lot of issues have been resolved. These are the non, if you like, contentious ones. So there is, if you like, a good part of this document, which will be rather large, agreed. What is not agreed are the sensitive issues around, from a European perspective, whatever deal we do, how will it be governed? How will we know that it will be fully implemented? We also want to make sure that if we have a trade agreement with the United Kingdom, that their standards will be equivalent to our standards. And the big fear on this issue is that the United Kingdom has repeatedly said the entire objective of Brexit is divergence, not convergence, where we start from today. And then there's fish. And I think that that is a highly political issue. The details of what is on the table aren't entirely clear, but there is demand and really a requirement from the EU side that EU boats are not just pushed out entirely out of UK waters, while respecting that they want, as they say, to take back control. What we want is a managed situation for the present and for the future. Now, when you ask the state of play, you know, people are saying this is 50-50. What I think is fair to say that both parties are keen to have an agreement. I think that's very clear. And I think it should be the situation given COVID, because this is adding an extra layer of trauma for businesses and people. On the other hand, both parties, the European Union has, if you like, red lines, and the United Kingdom has repeated their demands. And it is then for the negotiators skillfully this afternoon to try and come forward with our, if you like, an unlocking of those difficult issues. And none of us can predict that that will happen. However, they have been urged to do that from their highest levels, if you like. So let's see what happens this afternoon into the night. I think in the morning, Michel Barnier will be briefing early EU ambassadors. So the next 48 hours are very crucial.
We'll wait to see if there can be any unlocking. You mentioned some of the somber comments from Ursula von der Leyen last night. Let's have a quick listen to what she had to say.
We welcome the fact that progress has been achieved in many areas. Nevertheless, significant differences remain on the three critical issues: level playing field, governance, and fisheries. Both sides underline that no agreement is feasible if these issues are not solved. And whilst recognizing the seriousness of these differences, we agreed that a further effort should be undertaken by our negotiating teams to assess whether these issues can be resolved. We are therefore instructing our chief negotiators to reconvene tomorrow in Brussels, and I will speak again to Prime Minister Boris Johnson on Monday evening.
So that was the assessment of the Commission President Ursula von der Leyen last night speaking in Brussels. I suppose what it comes down to, Mairead McGuinness, is that although these talks have been going on for a while, the mood music, or certainly the reports of any progress, have been very few and far between for the last while. Everyone seems to be taking a very downbeat note. And I wonder, really, does anyone expect there to be any scope for an unlocking if the principals themselves, the leaders of the two respective parties, weren't able to reach any new common ground last night? Why bother sending the negotiators back in to repeat the talking points that they've already had?
Yeah, I think that the phone conversations between the president and the British Prime Minister would have dealt not with trying to come forward with a solution, but understanding the perspectives of the two parties and then giving the remit to the negotiators to come back again and try, even though the significant differences exist, to find some common ground. You know, I suppose it's kind of hard to recall that this referendum happened in 2016. And at the time, a lot of commentators on the UK side said a deal could be done, you know, overnight without much fuss. We now realise that when you try to unpick 37 years of cooperation, convergence, etc., where the UK was part and parcel of the European Union, you're really unpicking every single aspect of how we live, work and play as neighbours and partners. And therefore, it is not a surprise that there are difficulties. If you look at the politics of this and the emotion, clearly Brexit, there's a great deal of political and emotional issues for the United Kingdom, indeed, in the European Union likewise. However, around fishing, which we know isn't a massive economic issue, but it is a very big political issue. And I recall when I was a member of the European Parliament and after the referendum, one of the most difficult meetings I attended was about fisheries, where there were some colleagues, MEPs, who were pro-Brexit and clearly other MEPs. And, you know, it almost came to friction, let me put it that way, because the emotion around this is very high. So it's not surprising that that is there. What I think complicates the matter is that none of us, wherever we are, can claim absolute territory in terms of fish and water, because there are issues around protecting fish stocks, and that comes to quotas, which is why this becomes a more complicated discussion. And equally, if a country is looking for access, continued access to the EU market when the UK leaves, clearly there has to be some, if you like, give and take around that. So you can't just exclude all EU boats from British waters entirely and forever if you want access to market. So these are difficult conversations. And I think we know, and they're well rehearsed, the trick, if there is one, is to see in these three areas, can we find a way where both parties see progress that doesn't require, if you like, anyone having to concede. Now, when I look at these and when I look at negotiations that, you know, I've been involved in around pieces of legislation, sometimes in the very end, you hear this sort of, if you like, engagement where people can't go any further. And perhaps we're at that stage, but I'm not so sure it's as simple as that. So I would not be saying, yes, I see this definitely happening, that a deal can and will be done. I don't think I am in a position to say that, because the positions are so far apart on very fundamental issues.
So is that to say then that you just can't predict whether there'll be an outcome, or that you don't foresee there being one?
I think nobody can predict there will be an outcome. I think with the best efforts and with flexibilities, we all hope there will be. And I'll repeat again, the reason why we absolutely need it now more than ever is because COVID-19 has sapped the energies and indeed resources of all our member states, and indeed the UK as well, because public health is a priority. Mm-hmm. And one of the big concerns I would have is that businesses that had been preparing in the early part of this year for Brexit, a lot of work from at an EU level, at member state level, they have been taken over by trying to cope with Brexit, or with COVID rather, and trying to manage their businesses through closures and reopening. So the space for business to prepare has shrunk, and the time left in which to do that is very, very short. So I think that whether there's a deal or no deal, to some extent we can expect disruption. I suppose the extent of that disruption will depend on whether there is an agreement or not.
Yeah, I'll come back to the extent of that disruption and what it might mean, deal or not, in a couple of minutes. But let me just read you an example from today's Sunday Times. I don't know if you've had a chance to see it, but it's a piece written by their British political editor, Tim Shipman. And he's trying to articulate or to illustrate some of the difficulties that the UK might have with the way in which things are going. So say, for example, that if the EU said that 20 pigs could live in a sty and Britain only wanted to have six, Britain would either have to change its rules to fall in line with whatever the EU's norm was, or the EU could slap on unilateral lightning tariffs without having to go to any kind of independent independent arbitration first. As the senior British government source is quoted, this isn't Brexit. I mean, it does seem a little bit unfair or a little bit of a betrayal of whatever Brexit was supposed to achieve, that you could still have the UK unilaterally being tied to whatever it is that the EU decides as its own policy from now till kingdom come.
Let me put it in the opposite to some extent. At the moment, we are level. So all the standards around food safety, animal welfare are, you know, the one, because we're all part of the European Union. And I repeat, the mantra of Brexit has been to diverge. I mean, that is the absolute goal. If we knew how that was going to happen, and we won't deal with livestock, but in other areas as well, it would help us, if you like, plan better. The truth is we don't know what it will mean. In the early days, I can't see any divergence because there will be no logic to it until the UK has time to resolve that. So therefore, if we are to do an agreement where we can work together on trade, we need to have a way, first of all, of understanding when and if the United Kingdom moves in one direction, or indeed when we upgrade or review legislation that might bring about changes, and that we resolve that as partners in some format, and that we can check that there is, if you like, a level playing field around standards.
Okay. You can understand how that doesn't feel like sovereignty on Britain's part, though.
Well, you see, it's an interesting concept, sovereignty and independence from the United Kingdom side. I mean, I think when you live in a world with other nations, all of us are sovereign, but we need to cooperate. I think what I get the sense from the UK side is that sovereignty for them is absolutism. So that if they say something that they want to do in a particular area, whether it's around food production or fish or whatever, environmental issues, that's it and no more, and they don't need to discuss it with anyone. But clearly, if you look at even climate change, and the UK are wanting to lead on this as Europe is, you can't do that on your own. You have to cooperate with others. So in a way, I think what we need to work through is, why is sovereignty seen as, you know, being blinkered to the need to discuss with your former partners in the European Union, to demand that it is this way and no further? And you could, of course, come back and say, well, Europe is doing the same. But Europe is, you know, 27 nations that were with the United Kingdom once, 28. Collectively, we agree on things that can be very difficult negotiations, but we agree and we move forward. In this case, we have a large member leaving in one direction and wanting to stay part of the benefits, you know, to be in the single market, but not to be called the single market, to have access to markets, to be sovereign and independent in terms of making their own rules. What Europe is trying to say and has in the negotiations, you know, we understand that. But if you want to have access to our markets, there's a few things we need clarity on and certainty on. And I suppose one of the other points I would make in this week, where everyone will be a bit tense and wondering and worried, you know, even if there is no agreement, the difficulty will be that in January sometime or in early February, you know, the UK and the European Union are going to have to talk about things, whether it's called a trade agreement or whatever. There will be issues that we will need to resolve. So it doesn't go away.
So if there's no deal in December, then the same issues still have to be entertained in January, one way or another.
Exactly. There has to be an agreement. There has to be a settlement. And I suppose what would be great, but I don't think it will happen because the whole Brexit issue is quite an emotive one, is that people would, you know, look at this in a very calm way and say, what's best for our countries and our citizens? And clearly what's best is that we work together to solve these problems, that we don't diverge from one another hugely, because if you do, then it's difficult to trade or to have a relationship. And we acknowledge that in a globalized world, that any nation, even Ireland, independent and sovereign, alone is not strong enough or is not able to do all of the things without the cooperation and agreement with others. And I think that maybe globalization perhaps has led to the United Kingdom having a different attitude, while at the same time, when I listen to their comments about being a global player now, they want globalization led by the United Kingdom. Now, there are other issues in all of this, you know, the withdrawal agreement, the protocol on Northern Ireland, you know, in one sense. And I've written down one word as I speak to you, and it is trust. It's a very small but significant word. And I suppose because of what has happened with the Internal Market Bill in the House of Commons, and clearly the House of Lords took a very dim view of the idea of the UK breaking international law, that has not helped, and it hasn't gone away.
Can I ask you then one final question on that, because we're completely out of time, so as close to a yes or no answer as you can on this. It appears through reports that Boris Johnson wants to restore some of those contentious clauses to the Internal Markets Bill as early as tomorrow. There's been suggestions within the Irish government that if he does that, that is basically a clear breach of trust and that there can't be a deal. Do you agree?
I think if this were to happen, it will make a deal very, very difficult, because it isn't just Ireland that's looking at this. The European Union, in good faith, signed an agreement with Boris Johnson. He signed it too. And the world will be looking at how they would judge the United Kingdom breaking an international agreement, particularly around a peace project, ultimately. And I dare say the US would be looking very closely at this as well. So let's hope that whatever is planned is delayed to allow the talks come to a good solution, which will be, if you like, a lose-lose for everyone. Even a deal is bad for everyone, because what we have today is the best of all possible worlds in terms of our relationship. Changes to that make the relationship different and less effective.
Mairead McGuinness, Commissioner for Financial Stability in the Capital Markets Union, thank you very much for joining us this lunchtime on The Record. Very much appreciate your time.